Campus 2004, Easter Seminar, The Illumined Christ in All. Lecture 3, What Will Happen to Creation? What will happen to creation? We discussed the illumined Christ in all and what is expected of us, but now what will happen to creation? As we look at the world about us, as we look at what we see outside in our objective world, what do we see? Now, if we are the illumined Christ, if we are the Christ, if we are illumined, what will we see? We will see everything beautiful and good. We will see everything fulfilling its natural purpose. And what is its natural purpose? As we estimate it to be, it is good and very good. Okay, now, what will happen to creation? Think about this now. You are number one. I am number one. Each of us are number one. We are each the creator of our own world. And as the creator of our own world, we create our world exactly like we'd like to have it be. We create our world to be a wonderful, fulfilling, satisfying, outstanding thing, outstanding experience. However, you think differently than I do about what's outstanding. You might think that having all the women in the world super beautiful is not the most desirable thing. You might think yourself being super beautiful is enough. Having all the men be super beautiful, that's your desire. Okay. Now, a man, not wanting all that competition, he might create himself the most handsome person and everybody else looking okay. And the women all gorgeous as can be. Now, you say, Herb, that's kind of mundane, that's kind of ordinary. It is, isn't it? And so long as we are on our human trek, that's what we will experience. And that's why we ask the question, what will happen to creation? If I create peace on earth, and I am a very powerful creator, I instantly enjoy anything I create. Is there peace on earth? We conducted the School of the Master here a number of years ago. We do this from time to time. And in the School of the Master, we told all the participants that they were number one and there was nobody else here except them. They had to make meals for a lot of people, but they were the only person who was eating. They had to come to the table, and when I said I'd like a glass of water, they all brought me a glass of water, but still there was only one person there, the person who said they are number one with me. Okay. If you are number one, and you create the world as you would like it created, is the world created as you would like it created? And the answer is yes, of course. Now, if you are number one, and you are the only person on earth. If you are number one, and you are the only person on earth. If you are number one, and you are the only person on earth. I purposely repeat this. You are the only person on earth. There is no me. There is no otherness. There is no mama, papa, sister, brother, aunt, uncle, cousin, whatever, children. It's only me. It's only the you. You're the only person here. Now, if you create me being more powerful than you are, you create me as being, let's forget about me. You create another person as another person. You create them as a friend, for instance. And then you create that friend very talented because you think that'd be cool. Well, that friend is then very talented and expressing that talent in many wonderful ways, making you just a tad jealous. And then you say, well, that's not too cool. I'm going to create that person my peer and equaled with me. We both are the same talent. Well, that's not too interesting either. It's okay for a time. But you don't want to create yourself superior to the other person, because then you're always having to be their teacher, always having to show them around. You want to create them wise and intelligent and so forth. So learning how to be God, learning how to be the creator, is quite a task. It's quite a task, because what is it that you want to get out of being number one? What is it you want to get out of being the divine creator of your universe? What do you want to get out of it? Well, you don't really know. You really have no idea what you want to get out of being the divine creator. And the reason that I say that is that if you knew what you wanted to get out of being the divine creator, you would start creating in light of what you want to get out of it. Now, do you want to create a person as a peer to you, an equal to you, someone who is a friend and, you know, you chit-chat equal across the board? Or do you want to create a person who's got a few problems and they need your advice and your help so that you can give them a little special unconditional loving? Or do you want to create someone superior to yourself, because then you can go to them for help when you need it, but you never need it because you're the divine creator of everything? Now, you see, this is the kind of world we live in right now. This is the world where we live in, among people who are our equals, people who are superior to us, people who are inferior to us, people who are wonderful, people who are not wonderful, people who are every single walk of life. And that's why we say, what will happen to creation when you start living from your divine, Christ-centered consciousness? When you start living from your divine, Christ-centered consciousness, what you are doing is you are seeing everything super, everything good. You are seeing nothing needing you or wanting you, and you don't need anything and you don't want anything. And you create yourself, it is all done. It is all complete. There's nothing to create. You create yourself as being the fulfillment of everything. Now, from this point of view of a human, it seems kind of sad to do that. Because where is the adventure? You go to play a game of chess, you already won it. You know, you go to fly an airplane, and you've already landed. And it's true. You see, this is what happens when you are the perfect creator. You don't create the beginning and the middle and the end. You create the whole thing, and it's done. And you say, my God, Herb, that is outrageous. But it's true. You create the whole thing as done. I told you I flew with this young Navy boy, and he was sitting in the middle seat between me and a lady, and he had his head down on the thing, and he was, you know, very upset. Obviously, he didn't like to fly. And I created him having a nice nap, and he apparently took a nap. And I went on with my activities, my reading and what have you. And eventually he woke up, and then he started talking. Well, I created him being interested in me. I created him being interested in what I had to say. I created him being an alert, intelligent young man who was pleasant and who was exactly the type of traveling companion you'd want to have if you have one. And he also went to an aircraft carrier like I had been on in the Pacific. He also was in the various areas of study for preparation as I was. He looked down at the bay and he says, oh, there's a this kind and there's a that. And he named all the carriers and all of the destroyers and all of the ships in the harbor, because he had had to learn them. Now, why did I create such a person like he? I created him because it was a pleasant little interlude. It was like having a toy to play with for a few minutes, you know. And I was playing with his thinking, his mind, and I knew before he said anything what he's going to say. I knew before he acted how he was going to act. because he was my creation. I created him as a pleasant, timid young fellow, you know. And now, why wouldn't I create him as a suave, debonair, self-confident person who had been around the world a number of times and more interesting talking to him? Because I didn't want to talk to somebody. I am not interested in going on airplanes and talking to people. If people talk, I talk, but I'm not interested in having them talk. I have too many things to think about. I have too many things to meditate on. I'm in a totally different environment than I am in my office or at home, and I can just sit and relax, and my mind goes where I want it to go. I can steer it wherever I want it to be, and my mind is very cooperative. However, if I were in the midst of a conversation with somebody, would I learn anything? No. Would they learn anything? A great deal, of course. But why should I have all of this discussion when I could just be enjoying myself? I like my own company. I like my own time together with me because it's a good time and it's a worthwhile time. But what will happen to creation if everybody were that way and was not interested in anybody else in creation? What would happen? For us, it would be silent. But now, does that mean that, you see, now this is the point that we're coming to now. Does that mean the creation, when I'm not around, is just waiting for me to say something?
No.
The creation that I'm not around is doing what?
Doing their own thing.
Being themselves and having fun. Now, can they go contrary to what I think they should do?
Well, they have a free will.
Absolutely. They can go totally contrary to what I think they should do. But the minute they come into my presence, then they live according to my thought. They have no free will in my consciousness. They only have free will when they leave my consciousness. Because in my consciousness, I am the creator, right?
What?
I am number one.
What about that?
When you're in my consciousness, you should be doing exactly what I want. But what is it that we have here?
A school.
And since we have a school, what goes on in the school?
We are revealing who we are.
You are learning to be yourself. You're revealing who you are to yourself. You're being yourself. I don't want you to be a clone of me. I've said that many times.
Right.
I don't want you to be a clone of me. I could have that very easily. I could just have you as a clone and do everything I want done and just love me and take care of me and wash my feet for me and do all these silly things, you know. I could have you just wait on me hand and foot and glove and eyebrow, you know. But that's not my purpose here, is it? That's not my purpose, is it? No answer. It's not my purpose here. Because if it were my purpose, I could have a very peaceful, relaxed, laid-back life, you know? But you would be just doing whatever I felt you should do. You would just be smoothly going on doing anything I wanted you to do. Now, Ellen?
Yeah.
Why did we replace the staircase a couple times?
Because we wanted it perfect.
Why wasn't it perfect the first time? We gave free will to the individual putting it up. Remember?
Yes.
And he put it up basically correctly the first way. But it was not comfortable to walk.
Yeah.
It was 7-7.
Right.
And so I said, no, I want it 4-16.
Right.
16-foot step and four-inch rise. Four-foot rise. Four-inch rise. And so then we had Geraldo put it in, and what did he do?
He made us keys.
Geraldo got so impressed with his ability that he had three crews of men going at the same time, and he was not talented enough to take care of them all at one time. He's a good man, but he wasn't talented enough to take care of them all the time. And so each job was less than perfect. Each job, not just the one, but the one that was the worst was the toboggan slide staircase. The staircase was put in so wet that it slipped down and pointed downward, and any person walking down the staircase could slide right straight down.
Strange feeling it was.
Hmm?
It was a strange feeling.
It was a very strange feeling to walk up and down, yeah. You felt very insecure. So out it had to come, and in with a new one. Now we did the same thing in front of the garage. We took out the walk and the step there because it wasn't done right. What was missing, Ellen? The re.
The
re? Re-bar.
Oh, okay.
Re-bar. It's the bars that go in the concrete to give it strength. The rebars were not put in there, so it was not properly hung to the garage. And so we had to take that out. And who took that out?
Anita and Irene.
And Irene, right? They went in there with sledgehammers and took it out. Who took out most of the steps, the first set of steps?
Also.
And they were nicely built with rebar, the big steps up there. They didn't come out so easy. But why didn't I just leave it? I don't walk up and down that step enough to make a difference. Why didn't I just leave it?
Because we are at school and we practice.
Now, who got the biggest lesson out of that? You or Gerald?
I.
Yes. Each one of you got the biggest lesson because you thought, my goodness sakes, $18,000 to put in that staircase and tear it out, you know, or whatever it cost. And that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money for forming it up, putting the concrete in, putting the rebar in, putting all that stuff in. But you see, we did it several times until we finally got it right. Now, you see this, why, what would happen to creation if we were spiritually illumined people? You see, what would happen to creation if we were spiritually illumined people and acting like that? Ellen, I said the word a while ago, anybody else know it too. If you know, Esther, what the word is, I said the word a little while ago. It's what they're trying to do with sheep and cows and stuff like that now, too.
To clone.
You see, you could all be clones, and this would be a perfectly harmonious, smooth-running universe where everyone is a clone and everyone is perfectly nice, okay? But what growth would each of you have out of this? What self-confidence would each of you have? None. You say, well, Herb, how can you make clones out of people who are real people?
Well, if clones are clones, then they don't know anything else than being clones.
You are number one. You are the creator of the universe. You are God for yourself and your universe. And as you create your universe, you create it however you want it to be in your image. Now, if you create it in your image, if God, and God did, if God created the world and created Adam and Eve, for instance, then did God create Adam and Eve to be like they were? Yes. Did God create Adam and Eve to make a mistake, or not make a mistake, but to violate his rule? Yes, he did. Ellen, yes, he did. He is having fun and being himself.
Who is he?
God. No, I'm just saying, if God did God. Now, I'm just taking the Bible story. I know, you're playing me a game. But the Bible story, if we take that, and God is a he in that one, and God is a she in other ones, and God is black in other ones, and white in others, you know. But anyhow, why could God create as God created in the Old Testament and yet be so tough sometimes on his creation?
That was actually not a God as a creation. That was designed by man who had...
But it was created by the one who wrote it down.
Yes.
That one had it in his consciousness.
Exactly.
Now, let's just pretend that the one universal God in all of us, the one universal God acting independently, okay,
mm-hmm.
created everything, mm-hmm. and created it just like the Bible has it. Would it be bad?
No.
Would it be wrong?
No.
Would it be something that should be changed?
No.
It's an is, and it represents what?
Everything is good and very good.
It represents God being itself and having fun. The little boy, remember? He was playing out in the street in the mud puddle.
Yeah.
And he had his little island there, and he had the little leaves for boats, and he had sticks and so forth for other boats, and ants for people and stuff like that. And then he had a nice lake there, a nice puddle, and his mommy says, come in, time for lunch. And so he looked at his creation, and he enjoyed it, and he said, yep, that's fine. Then he said, and I'm done. And he jumped up in the air and jumped down in the middle of his puddle and splashed everything away. All the ants away, all the boats away, all the lake away, everything. Was that an evil act?
No.
Was it an evil act that the earthquake took away the lives of many people?
No.
Was it an evil act that a volcano took place?
No.
Was it an evil act that rains and storms drowned many people?
No.
What if it were your mother? Would that be an evil act?
It would be her creation. I'm not being touched by it.
Well, Ellen, I want you to stop doing that. At this moment, I am talking to you about I am number one.
Okay.
You're number one. You created that. You're God. You created the Old Testament. You created those things happening. You know.
Right.
You created all because you liked it. Now, could you create something that would kill somebody you love? Sure. And you do, don't you? Oftentimes.
Yeah.
You create a war. You create a disease or an illness, you know. And you create lots of things, you know, accidents. Those are all, there's no such thing as an accident that has no reason for happening. Everything has its cause. So you create all of that. And that's why we're looking at this statement here. What will happen to creation when we act from our divine Christ center? What will happen to creation when we act from our divine center?
It's good and very good.
What will happen to creation is that it will cease to be an other creation and it will be all our creation. All our creation. And there will be no other creation in the entire universe except ours. That's hard to believe, but it's true. There cannot be another creation in the universe when we have ours. So, we are the creators, and we create everything. And because we create everything, we are responsible for everything. And because we're responsible for everything, we are the ones who have to make the choices as to whether they are what we call good or bad, or desirable or undesirable. Now, none of our creation can ever be wrong. Our creation can be not so good, but it can never be wrong. Why is our creation never wrong? Because I am number one and there is no other beside me. Did you hear that? You are number one and there is no other beside me. Now, in the absolute concept of all, am I aware of your creation and are you aware of Sylvia's or Ingeborg's or Esther's creation? Whose creation are you aware of? Only yourself. That's right. And for the benefit of the listening audience, she's pointing to herself and saying me. So now, who are you creating anything for the benefit of?
For myself.
For yourself. Why is it that you create such tough things on you? Now, Ellen, here is a statement. Somebody has an accident, and we say, you brought that on yourself. Now, is that true?
What was the second thing? You brought that on yourself?
Yes, you brought that on yourself. Is that true?
The one who had the accident, you mean?
Yes.
Okay. In my world, it's the only world.
It's the only world that we're talking about, yeah.
So I am the one who made it happen.
Oh, didn't they make it happen?
Because they are not existing. There's only me existing and there are my creations.
All right. Why would you kill them? Why would you maim them? Why would you hurt them, your creation?
It's an ill.
But why would you hurt them?
Choice.
Ellen, I don't.
Okay.
I don't hurt them because I have no relative, feeling of judgment on that. You see, the little boy who jumped in the puddle, though he didn't excommunicate and kill hundreds of people, what did he do? He washed away hundreds of ants. Yeah. Now, can you understand that?
Yeah.
Okay, now, we're to this point now. What will happen to creation? What will happen to creation when I am absolute? And now we come to the answer for that. What will happen to creation is each of us is an is, and each of us have our entire world as an is. Our entire creation is an is, and it does not touch each other. We are not aware of the is that the other has, and it is done. It is done. What's your question? I didn't hear you. Her. What's your question?
I didn't have a question. She's mentioned. What?
I say, if I'm living that, I'm done.
Because why are you still around?
Because I'm having fun.
All right. Then you're still around because you're having fun. Are you going to leave right away? Not necessarily. But the thing is, each is an is. And one is does not know what another is doing. You understand that?
Intellectually, yes.
Intellectually. Well, Ellen, that's the only place you will understand it, intellectually. One is does not know what another is doing because each is only knows itself. You understand?
Yeah.
Each is only knows itself. So whatever the is does, it only knows itself. Now, can an is affect another is? Can an is blow up its world in which another is having its isness?
By choice.
No. Each is has their own world. Each is has a world completely separate, completely distinctive from the other, not related in any way. It's, we're touching upon the absolute.
Well, then why be untouchable?
What's that, please?
Then I would be untouchable.
As an is, you'd be untouchable. And Ellen, each is untouchable. It is the nature of the is to be untouchable. Okay? So, do you enter into the game of the is and forget the everyday field that lies before you? Do you forget that there's a Sylvia out there and an Esther out there and an Ingeborg and a Herb? Do you forget that?
No.
Or are you aware that they are creators of their world too?
Yes.
And are you aware that sometimes they're good creators and sometimes they're not so good? Yes. You are aware.
So each is his own creator, you say?
Is. That's
and
true.
And there is only one creator and one is.
Ellen, when you get to the realization that that is true, then you will recognize that is true. And until you get to the recognition, you think that there's a Sylvia out here playing in Sylvia's world. with Sylvia's relatives and friends that you don't know anything about, with Sylvia's fun things that you don't know anything about. And same with Esther here. Esther comes into your world for 3 weeks, and you think you know her, and you don't realize that she's playing a game with us, that she is being very humble with us. When she goes back home, she is the queen. She's the queen of Estonia or something, you know. And so she goes back home, and this humbleness that she shows us, this contriteness that she shows us, is just a game she played for here. Because she wanted to see if we were going to pull any miracles. And she'd like to learn how to do them. See? And that's true. Now, the same with Ingeborg. Ingeborg has a wardrobe in her closet that you don't even see. Ingeborg is a great thief. And Ingeborg does what? She has a closet full of, faces and dresses and various things. And she dresses, and one day she is like some fabulous business executive. The next day she's a housewife. The next day she's a mother. The next day she's a whatever, you know what I mean? And she's got all these masks she pulls over her head that make her look like what she wants. Or if not a mask, she just thinks the thought. And then that thought is who she is. And so you think that Ingeborg, the one that you're meeting, is the only Ingeborg there is. And she is 20 different people. Right? Yeah. That's beautiful. But you see, this is what we're talking about here. We're talking about the oneness, the isness, the principle, and we're talking also about the generality of all. How many people are on Earth? 6 billion, more or less.
Billion.
And how many people will be on Earth by the year 2020?
20 billion.
Huh?
20 billion.
No. There'll be 9 billion or less. Because the population in the world is decreasing. People are having less and less children. Really. It's quite an exciting adventure. People are having less and less children. Now, what are they doing? They're going to school. The people. They're learning about this world that they're in. They're not just letting their kids know it all, they're knowing it themselves. Why is that? Why are they letting the people, the kids know all that and they don't know it? Or do they know it too? They know it too. Right. So, if we think from the Christ consciousness, if we think from the Christ awareness, and then we think it is an is, and it is not aware of anything else, can that is create 6 billion people playing games in its backyard? Sure. It can do anything it wants to do, and does. But is it happy? It's neither happy nor unhappy, because it is just being itself. Now, I know this is a touchy, difficult aspect of the Christmas and Easter story, but what is it really? Why did Jesus the Christ be a demonstration of these principles? Why did Muhammad be a demonstration of these principles? Were there Christian wars in which the Christians went out and slaughtered everybody who didn't want to say they were Christians? Do the Muhammads go out and do that same thing in our present day world, and are they too considered evil for doing that? Yeah. Now, you see, we're no better than anybody else. We should be, and we can be, but we're not. And why are we no better than anybody else? Because we're all one. We're all one. And we're all the same. And if it were truth were known, we'd be back in one little pie. and not as separate individuals, but as one. One beautiful being. Now, that's a philosophical concept that is difficult to latch onto, difficult to claim, difficult to believe in, but it's true. It's true. Think of that. Think of that. From the absolute point of view, there is no war, there is no peace, there is no problem. From the absolute point of view, all is. From the absolute point of view, there is not going to be any change. From the absolute point of view, we should all be sitting in a perfectly air-conditioned room with perfect conditions to the whole thing, you know what I mean? So that we do not even feel our bodies. We do not even feel our bones or our mind. We just are ourselves and having fun and enjoying it. It's a wonderful thing. It's a wonderful thing, but I think to get across the point that we are all an is in the is's, and not one is aware of another is in absolute phraseology. But in the relative phraseology, we're all aware of each other. And as we're all aware of each other, what do? Then we respond to each other. Then we want to say we're the creator of each other and therefore they should behave. Why did the World Council of Churches, the World Council of Peacemakers, or whatever the names they have for these councils, why is it that they set themselves up as the God for all the rest of the councils to tell them how they're supposed to determine what's right and wrong for their country? Why do we have that? In some countries, they treat women poorly. And we go over there and say, you shouldn't do that. They say, why shouldn't we? Because in America, you don't do that. Oh, I see. Well, this is not America. This is my country. And what are you doing in my country, telling me how to run my country? You know? How are we to say that America is the right way to do it? How are we to say that what goes on here is the way? Well, because it's our choice. We chose to be here. We chose to be aware of it. We chose to live in it. We chose to experience it. And so we have. Do you understand that at all?
Yes.
Because that's a very tough question to ask anybody. Very tough question. Because when you say that all is one, and there is none others, just like in our school of the master, everyone had difficulty not slamming the door in their in the face of the person following them. But they were supposed to not even know there was anybody else there. And it'd be a lot of fun to play that game and be aware that you are only one, the only one in the universe. And then have a number of illusions of other people around. Wouldn't that be an exciting thing, you know? My, the things that we do are really wonderful. Really wonderful. So, here we are. What will happen to creation? And we don't really know. We don't really know, and we don't really care. Because creation is going to be whatever our thought is at any given moment. Now, what is creation at your given moment? Where does creation stand at your given moment? Where does creation stand where you are? Does creation stand as something sacred? Something that is created by an infinite creative cause that says, don't monkey with anything I've done? We have to think about that. Creation is created by what? Thought. Ideas. Creation is created by just those sort of things, and are they sacred?
No.
They're just ideas and thoughts. And you see, we have made them sacred, and do you know why they were made sacred? They were made sacred because nobody wanted to have their ideas monkeyed with. What's your original purity and perfection? What is it? Ingeborg, what's your original purity
and perfection. What is it? You don't know. You don't know, and you don't really care. But you see, when you say, I return to my original purity and integrity, my original purity and perfection, what are you saying? You don't even know. Nobody knows. But what you say is, I'm returning to that. Now, as you return to that, what is happening to you?
I'm the original person.
You are expressing your ideal. Now, it's not my personal ideal. It's the ideal of what a man is, what humankind is. At the perfection of a voice, of a magic self, and ever, what do you call it,
re-energizing, but
the body is ever replenishing or not rebirthing, but it's continually
reproducing.
And that's in the ballpark there.
Revealing.
No. Well, revealing is correct too, but that's not the word of. Huh?
Regenerating.
Yeah, but it's recreating is what it's doing, but it's not recreating. It is revealing. It has to be the right word. It's constantly revealing itself. Okay? When are you going to know what your ideal purity and integrity is? When are you going to know it? You have any idea?
Yeah, now.
All right. Tell me about it. Tell me about it. What is your idea, your integrity, your ideal wholeness and perfection?
That's my ideal expression.
What? What?
My ideal expression I cannot describe.
Well, it is describable. It is something that is tangible, but it cannot be related to anything. It is tangible, like you say, this is a house. And yet, can you touch the house? Can you touch the idea house in your mind?
In my mind, yes.
No, you can't touch it either. Yeah, physically you have to touch it out here, but when you say house even out here, everyone has an idea of what you mean. But each idea of the house is quite different. And it's different also from what area of the country you live in. If you live in Alaska, you're not inclined to have so many windows. If you're living in Florida, you might want a lot of windows in California to enjoy the sunshine, enjoy the changeable weather. But again, what is the ideal? And there is no one ideal for a house, for a body, for a person, for any of these things. All there is the expression of what you want to see manifest. Now, you would like to see manifest your house. So you come to the United States and you have your citizenship and you have this and that and everything is all set, then you decide you're going to build your house. Now you look at your house in Switzerland, you looked at your experiences in London and in West Africa and everywhere in the world, and you have a visualization of the nice things in each one of their houses, and so you incorporate them into yours. And when you incorporate them, what are you doing?
Limiting.
Yeah, you're limiting. But you're giving your ideal. You see, that's the ideal that you have at the moment. But is it your real ideal? Now, what if you were to meditate, as you will do after this talk? What if you were to meditate and you were to go out and you were just to think, what is my ideal house? And you could talk to yourself. Could you come back with an idea in your mind of an ideal house? How could you do that? What would you use as a reference? What does ideal mean to you? Now, ideal to a plumber means good plumbing throughout the house. Ideal to a carpenter means a well-built house with framing well done. Ideal to an electrician means plenty of outlets and bless his heart. And an ideal to many other areas mean different things. So what must you do? You must put together all these different fields and then create your house. You put together the plumber, the woodworking man, the wall man, you know, the closet man, the kitchen man, all the things that you have. You put them all together and you come up with something very spectacular. But are you ready for that? Are you ready for that type of experience? Are you ready to live in your ideal house? If you are, then go for it. If you're not, then maybe you should still go for it.
My ideal home is...
What's that?
My ideal home is within myself.
Your ideal home is within yourself. Well, why didn't you say that before?
Because I let you talk what you had to share.
Good. I'm so happy. But I keep asking you questions. What is your ideal house? What is your ideal body? What is your ideal self? Because the sooner you come to a conclusion, the sooner you can give it up.
Let it go.
Let it go. But you got to clean out your consciousness first of all of these things that you think are your ideal. Now, Ellen, does your ideal house have plumbing in it? And don't answer my questions. Ellen, does your ideal house have perfect electrical circuits in it? Does your ideal house have windows in it? Does your ideal house have doors in it? Does your ideal house have a garage? Does your ideal house have a basement? Does your ideal house have an attic? Does it have bedrooms and living room and dining room and kitchen and breakfast room and all these things? Does your ideal house have those things, huh?
No, because that's a limited house.
Mm-hmm. What does your ideal house have?
Things I cannot describe on this human level.
That's right. You can't describe them. Why can't you describe them?
Because the moment I would describe it, it would be limiting.
Ellen, your ideal house is a house that has no windows, but every wall is a window, and you can see through it, just as though it were a window. Your house has no doors in it, but wherever you choose to enter your house, you enter it by being one as it. Now, your ideal house has no plumbing, for there's nothing to be plumbed. You say, well, you need a bathroom, and you need a bathtub, and you need a toilet. Well, not really, because your ideal house has an ideal person in it. And the ideal person doesn't need a toilet, doesn't need plumbing, doesn't need a shower or a bath. You think your thought and you're douched. You think your thought and you're dressed. You think your thought and your toenails are clipped. You think your thought and your fingernails are clipped, you see? You think your thought and you are one as that thought in everything you do. Now, that's pretty neat, isn't it? Now, what about your garage? Where are you going to keep your car?
I have no car because...
No. I move wherever I want to move by my thought. It's not I have no car.
Right, that's true.
We want to be real careful of those phrases.
Yes.
Because right away, that double limits us.
Yes.
All right? Now, you want a glass of tea. So what do? Do you go to the kitchen and make it? Or do you sit down on your chair and reach over to the table and there's your glass of tea, your cup of tea? You would like to have a beautiful dinner like Emile's mother had made. You're inviting over 60 people, remember? Okay. So, it's time for the party to begin. And your house is just like it always was. And so then you open the door. And here is your crowd of people coming in, and you say, welcome, welcome. And then you say, let's see, there's 63 of you. Okay, so you make a table setting for 63.
And you have perfect chairs sitting around the table. You have perfect cutlery and perfect dishes all over the table. You have everything is ideal. And when the people are ready to sit down, Ingeborg?
Immediately.
When the people are ready to sit down, how is the food prepared?
No.
How is the food prepared? It is there before them. As each person is ready to eat, whatever is their choice is right there in front of them. Now you say, oh, that's magic stuff. No, it isn't. What is it, Ingeborg?
Imagination.
That's good, but it is thought.
Right.
It is imagination and thought. You think in your imagination what it is you want, and then that's what you have. Now, is that impossible? Is it improbable? Not really either. You just haven't done it, that's all. You can. So, what is it that you want out of life? What is it that you want out of yourself? What is it that you want? Now, we say here, what will happen to creation? What will happen to creation when you no longer need to have a farmer working in the field to make corn? You no longer have, ovens and kilns and so forth to make dishes that you want. You no longer have glass blowers. You no longer have grocery stores. Yes, but you no longer have these things because you create them out of what? Out of thought. You see, you create all these things out of thought, and therefore you don't have to have the raw material creator, the farmer, the manufacturer, and stuff like that. So, Ingeborg likes to play with mechanical things. And so she creates a golf cart out in front of her house. Now, Ingeborg can create herself right where she's going without a golf cart. You understand? That's being shown in these books, too. Ingeborg can create herself right where she's going without a golf cart. She can create herself in taking her friend out. And she says, let's see, I think I'll have a supercar right now. I'm going to have a Mercedes, Jaguar, Benz, Bentley, Rolls-Royce combination. It's going to have all the features of all these cars. And then Ingeborg says, and I don't choose to drive. I'm going to sit and enjoy it. And so she has a driver and a footman sitting up front. What's a footman for? Why do people have footmen? Why do people have a footman for their car? A footman is a person who puts the footstool down, so you can step out of your carriage. Remember? Remember?
Yeah.
Remember? Yeah. Well, you see, then later they had electronic footstools. You see, none of you have spoken up for the job of being the footman for the motorhome. So we had to buy an electronic footstool. And so it goes down when we get out. But what's it all about? It's about the game of enjoying life. It's the game of what will happen to creation? Whatever we want to happen to it. Right now there are 5 of us sitting in this room, plus our dogs. And what is it that we'd like to demonstrate to the world just for the fun of it right now? Let's just say there's peace on earth now and eternally. Let's say that together. There is peace on earth and what?
Eternally.
There is peace on earth eternally.
There is peace on earth eternally.
You see, you want to change it now and then. There now is peace on earth and things like that. There is peace on earth eternally.
There is
peace on earth eternally.
Now, what newspapers have you read recently about wars?
None.
Are there any reports in the newspaper about wars?
No.
Will there be any reports in the newspapers about wars?
No.
Why not?
Because there's peace on earth eternally.
Is that right, Ingeborg?
Yes, it is.
Say it.
There is peace on earth eternally.
And what does that mean?
God is that I create everything you think by thought.
Yes,
no,
defining it, but...
No, there is peace and there is peace.
Why is there peace on earth eternally?
Because I want it eternally.
And you create it by what?
By thought.
Exactly. So, stick with it.
Yes.
Stick with it. There is peace on earth eternally, and you create it with your thought. Recognize that. Know that. Enjoy it. And it's done. It's done. Now, what did the principal say to the teacher when she was going to retire? What did the principal say to the teacher when she was going to, he was going to retire? Basically, not word for word, but basically. She said to him, "You are my most prized teacher in all of my teaching career, in all of my professional career. You are fantastic. You are the ultimate teacher's teacher." You see, this is essentially what she said. Now, why did she say that? Because he could get the students to wake up and enjoy their classes. And his classes were not easy classes. If you didn't like the classics, the class was not easy. Think on these things. And know these things are true, and know these things are for you, and know these things work all the time. And it is so. So, that will do it for this moment. And we will come back in an hour, and we will have our fourth lecture. So, I love you. I love you. I love you.
I love you.
I love you.
Okay. And Ingeborg?
Yes, sir?
You want to unclip the button here and let him go in the yard? I think he might want to do some duty. Just take the clip off there.
Yeah.
Another one.